he is filled with suspense and danger when he goes to take extraordinary measures. Yeah. Like,
welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with actor, puppeteer, comedian, and all-around thespian, Charles Hubble, about being in a movie with Sir Ben Kingsley.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-hosts, Molly Glover.
I'm fabulous.
And Nick Glover, who's not
as fabulous. I'm a co-host.
We are also joined by our fabulous guest, Charles Hubble. Hello, Charles.
Fabulous.
Yay. Hi. Charles Hubble.
I'm very pleased to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. Charles is a local actor. You've been on stage at the Guthrie, if I do not miss.
I have.
Yeah, I think I saw that in your CV. That you were on the Guthrie.
Yeah,
you've been
CV,
in,
right.
Been in several movies. Including a movie that's out now. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Also, puppeteer, part of Transylvania Television, Count La Shock.
Yeah,
right.
I've written words that have come out of Charles's hands.
Count La Shock is my favorite of all of them. He's my favorite. Like, just fucking kills me.
We're going to have to get him to do awesome. La Shock for the outro. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
It makes perfect sense because he's like a super old school villainous guy. What happens when you give that guy the internet and stuff? That's what happens. Like there's like several scenes in TV that are that kind of a you know.
What if?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I've always said that TV was some of my most favorite stuff I've ever done.
Yeah.
I love those guys, and I'm so pleased that you're working with Gordon right now.
I am. Yeah, and you're probably going to be part of the Vermin thing.
Yes.
Very exciting. Cool.
Yes, he has talked to me, and I failed to call Gordon today. But yes, I told him I would. So gotta call Gordon.
I discovered it so late that I just one day it kind of came up and I just binge watched it at work on YouTube and then I was like, why haven't I was kind of upset, like, why haven't this been brought to my attention sooner?
That was right before a fall con, and that was the year that we went and just bought, like, it was like, DVDs, please, and also, other things.
And it was like, I see you here at spring con or fall con, like, every year with your free Acker Monster puppet and stuff, and no idea what the fuck Transylvania Television was, because I had never watched it, and then I felt
so
like an
good.
Asshole.
I was very frustrated, because they asked me to come and start writing for them right about the time they stopped doing really anything with Transylvania Television. So I got to write for them for about 2 months doing
Tim
some web stuff.
TV
I did.
TV.
It was my fault.
What an asshole.
Yeah, no kidding. And I was just finally figuring it out.
You guys can't see the look of disapproval I'm giving you.
They can hear it.
They can tell.
That's good radio.
That is good radio. So, Charles, you have a movie that's out in theaters right now called Walking with the Enemy. And I thought we might want to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about filmmaking. You know, you've made movies. You've been on a set. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, Walking with the Enemy, what's it about?
Walking with the Enemy is about... Well, we just read the...
we did.
Yeah, that was
from
before
Flickster.
The show started. That doesn't
before
count.
Before the show started. Walking with the Enemy is a story... It's based on a true story, there was a guy with a very odd-sounding name, but he's a hero in the fact that he took in the movie, he takes a Nazi uniform, dons it, actually has a couple of them, gives them to his friends, and they go and rescue Jews out of jails, out of firing lines, out of trucks, gets them to, gets them connected with the Swiss consulate, and they get out of the country.
By posing as a Nazi and having a reason to bring them somewhere else.
It was wearing the Nazi uniform, having the confidence and bravado and arrogance, and then just walking up and yelling.
Carrying a clipboard.
These are my Jews.
These are my, These belong to me, or I need them. Like, there's a plan that he often uses where I need these people to dig ditches right now. And in the real story, the guy, this whole thing takes place in 1944 in Hungary. The real story of the guy is he took a uniform of the Arrow Cross, which was the fascist political power at that time. And the Nazis, when they came into Hungary and took it over, they used the Arrow Cross as their dogs. Right. So they did all the shit work. Right. And
local and for local, like, we don't know these streets. Local, we don't know these people. Yeah. Like, yeah, right.
So they so he took an Arrow Cross uniform to make the movie more dramatic, which I think was a good move.
Sure.
He then dons a Nazi uniform, so it made more sense that he could boss around Arrow Cross guys. And it creates this really great tension between his little group of fake Nazis and this real group of Arrow Cross guys. So we see that on this, that conflict on the streets. Then we see on the administration level, we see Ben Kingsley plays Regent Horthy, who was ruler of Hungary.
Uh-huh.
And when the Nazis came in, Bern Gorman plays a Nazi. I forget his name. I'm sorry, Bern.
when you remember Bern's name. That's the important
thing. It's hard. Yeah. Don't forget Bern Gorman's name. we come in and he basically says, Horthy, you're out. Eichmann is in, and I play Adolf Eichmann.
Adolf Eichmann. Yes. Sweet!
That's so really Lieutenant, super boss.
Yeah. Lieutenant Adolf Eichmann ruled over Hungary in 1944 and administered what became the most, I guess it was the most deaths, was under Eichmann's management.
Wow.
He was very efficient. He was very efficient at what he did, and in fact, in the administration sort of conflicts, so he goes against the regular army, and the regular army is trying to do the business of fighting the war, but Eichmann is trying to do the business of the Jewish solution.
Oh.
So he's taking all the resources and all the money and all the trains and making that happen in an extremely efficient manner. In fact, even against the Third Reich, the top dogs, telling him, no, really, let's stop. Let's just do the war. Adolf Eichmann was totally for the Jewish solution, was going to do this for Hitler, and he just took all the trains, leaving the regular army without a lot of stuff, and so they lost. And he ran, Adolf Eichmann snuck out at the end, like in December, before Christmas, out of Hungary, back to Berlin, and that's when the Russians came in and took over.
So thank God for genocide. Otherwise, we would have lost the war. No, there's no good way to say that.
You said it anyway.
Well,
and what was great about being in Palm Springs, the first time I saw it was in Palm Springs Film Festival.
Yeah.
And Palm Springs is all retired Jews and gays. And
oh my gosh.
At our showing, I think all the retired Jews came out to see the showing. And then we went to the party. That's where all the gays were. So at the end, we had the Q&A. And I'm already flying high, you know, I'm sitting next to Dean Cundey and we're watching the film together, and another cast member flew in from London, Simon Hepworth, and it's just awesome. The movie that I'm in is so awesome. And we did the Q&A, and the first question was, how do you sleep at night?
just playing a role, buddy.
It's just an actor.
Just like to formally say that I'm not actually a Nazi.
I have not killed a single Jew.
I didn't say that.
I went out there with my wife and son, and I didn't get a chance to hand off my son to my wife before the Q&A started. So I walked up on stage with my baby, and there was a lot of, Adolf Eichmann's got his baby, and.
Who did you steal that baby from, you monster?
So where did you film did you do the filming?
Bucharest, Romania.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I flew out 5 years ago. I flew out to L.A. To do an audition. It was just over a weekend. And I was flying back and forth to L.A. and here for all that year. I had an apartment out there, but I had a lot of work to do back here. So I got the audition, flew out there, did it, didn't hear anything for 7 months. And then I got a call that said, can you be in London in 2 weeks? We'd like to offer you this role. And then it was manic stress because I was my own representation. And Chris Ballas, bless him, was help me figure out things like, what are my negotiations?
Yeah.
How much am I worth?
And you don't
I'm not worth shit. So it all worked out just fine, and I held my own. They brought us out for rehearsals in London and then shipped us all home. And then there was a big move to Bucharest to put us all up there. And then I flew back and forth that June of 2009, I believe. And just flew back and forth like some kind of rock star. And they would put me up at the Radisson, and then I'd get to sleep. Then I would shoot all that day, sleep, back on a plane at 4 in the morning.
Wow.
And I did that 4 or 5 times. then they came back the next year for like a couple more days, and I got to run out to Dracula's castle and come back and shoot some more, and then I'm on the plane again, and then yeah, so
cool.
It was pretty cool, but it was so vague, and it was always like, well, yeah, I'm doing this movie, but there's no proof of it. You know, there's no
sure
you're going to Bucharest and shooting.
There's
a film.
No pictures of you in Bucharest. Yeah. Nobody knows you're there. Sure, for you sure. Are.
Yeah,
just was being it snuck in undercover, dark.
Was it when you saw the premiere, was it weird to see yourself on such a huge, huge screen in such a, I mean, you've been in other movies, obviously, right. But like, I mean, with this actual, you know, full on Hollywood treatment of it all, did it?
It hit me. What hit me was being in a film with Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And it hit me in Palm Springs, and it hit me again just on the 25th when it opened. I walk into a theater that I've gone to many times to see all the things I love. And
yeah.
I'm in that theater. It blew me away. I'm usually at the Uptown, or I can usually see myself at Riverview or Oak Street or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
But here, you know, it blew me away.
So this is something I've always wondered when you're making, you know, doing film work, because, you know, when you're on stage, you know, everyone's seeing everything. But when you're filming, you don't know where the camera necessarily is focused. You know, you have an idea, but was there any scene that you were surprised to see how they edited it together? Like the way you thought the scene went seemed different when you actually saw the movie?
I think the best way to answer that is I was surprised when I saw the final cut, because we did so many options of each scene. The filmmakers are real estate developers in San Diego.
Oh.
And they just have a love of film and a love of great, you know, heroic stories.
Sure.
Their studio they call is Liberty Studios, and they've, you know, got the Statue of Liberty, and they're all about heroic stories.
I hate Nazis.
They're villains.
And
they
what
are.
They are. I love playing Wolfenstein just because I could murder the hell out of Nazis.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, like everything constantly changed, and that was you know, I kind of would rib my British buddies, my British cast members, because he would change things right before we would shoot, and that would freak them the hell out. I'm sorry, you guys, but it would.
Classically trained, and
they were classic. You know, they've all been.
You're saying sorry for saying hell, and
I'm sure it's like Simon. I'll send this podcast to Simon and Charlie.
He doesn't want them to think he's disparaging them. I'm not disparaging
them. I love those guys. It's just a lot of them are very uptight about the improv roll with it nature, and I had to say, guys, I come from improv and comedy, and in the United States, we just roll with shit, man. So I know it sucks. It totally sucks. This whole script that I had, to apply an Austrian accent and all my character arcs and everything, all my study, it's all different. It's totally new lines.
Plus the emotional underpinnings. I mean,
Well, if someone has anxiety about something or they're really frustrated about something, and I mean, I get this with Molly a lot, it's not helpful, unfortunately, to say, don't worry about it. Like, try not to, don't let it weigh on your, you know, mind as it obviously is right now. Because if we could just suddenly pick and choose what we care about and don't care about, that'd be kind of awesome and maybe horrifying.
I would enjoy that.
Well, there was a lot at stake for a lot of us. So, like for me, it was the biggest goddamn thing I've ever done. And so I wanted to be awesome. I wanted to be right. And for somebody like Jonas Armstrong, who is the lead in the film, he's trying to break out of BBC's Robin Hood and get into film. He was really trying to do that. And the there's a stretch of the production over the years, I imagine was very frustrating for him. He ended up doing a horror film, which I hadn't seen. But then as of last year, Tom Cruise picked him up. He's in some new Tom Cruise film. I don't know, but I mean, it was a big deal for everybody.
Yeah.
Writing his tiny coattails.
But none of us really ever thought it was going to be anything bigger than that. We all thought the biggest person on it was going to be Jonas. It wasn't until the final year that they got all these celebrities on.
So like Ben Kingsley and people weren't attached until
And so when he showed up for that first scene, there's an amazing story about the fact that we were doing all the lines, we were doing the blocking, and he stopped and said, "Well, you guys are all doing accents," and we said, "Yeah." And then there's a big discussion about accents as whether that would be appropriate. Mm-hmm. And he brought up the theory of lingua franca, and because if it takes place in that country, everybody should have a British RP, and everybody foreign to that country should be the ones with accents. So yeah, the Nazis should have the accents, but maybe everybody in Hungary should have the British RP. Uh-huh. Well, that's not how we did it.
Right.
Uh-huh. Watch Schindler's List or watch, you know, some of these other,
right.
They all
right.
have that.
Right, that's...
All the natives have that RP.
I remember when I was a theater major, and in college, one of my professors was insistent. He was like, he hated Chekhov where they did Russian accents. Because
really?
He's like, they're speaking Russian. They shouldn't have an accent.
Right.
Oh, sure.
No, they shouldn't have an accent to each other.
Russians speaking English would have an accent.
Right.
But if they're speaking Russian to each other, there should be no accent because they're just talking normally.
Yes, absolutely.
He was furious. Absolutely furious.
Well, totally with him on that. As in Two Gentlemen of Verona, the musical version, by the way. Boy.
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, the director.
Can we hear a montage?
I don't even remember, but the director wanted wanted the characters to be Italian with an Italian accent.
Hey,
because we are in
the
Verona. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And we luckily managed to get that
carrying pizza and lasagna.
Oh my god, it was so bad. It was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm a gentleman.
Where am I gonna put all this salami? Right. Yeah.
So we had. So we surprised him with the accent thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had just flown in. His son's wedding was a day before. He had just flown into Bucharest that day. My big boner is that the first thing he did when he walked into the room is take off his, he was awesome, all black knit hat and black scarf and black leather jacket, and he was all black. Handed his black backpack off to the Romanian assistant. First thing he did is walk right up to me and shake my hand.
Wow. Hey,
it's great to see you. It's great to be here.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
It's gone.
Thank you for shaking my hand, Sir Kingsley.
And
the sir thing is something I'd like to bring up later. But but then he didn't realize, neither did Byrne, that we'd already been there for, this was the fourth year. They had no idea.
He thought it was day one.
And I think, and nobody's denied this, I think that Sir Ben Kingsley did not meet the director and producer until that day.
Wow. Hmm.
So he was all hired. I don't think any of them did.
You've been filming
Gorman
for
did.
4 years?
Well, it was the fourth year that
it was like
Ben Kingsley
flying
came
back.
Right,
and
but
forth
how long were you involved for that? I mean, four years of dealing with
it? I was of dealing with it.
That's amazing.
You know, not in the country.
No,
of course,
yes, but still, that's so long.
Of coming back to Minnesota and having guys go, were you in Bucharest for some reason and shooting? Yeah, I'm still shooting that.
That's got to be so different from doing stage performance. You know, with stage work, you do your rehearsals and you get on stage and it happens.
With stage,
and
8 weeks feels long.
Everybody knows the timetable. It's like, here's when we start rehearsals. Here's when the show opens. Here's when the show closes. It's
right.
Very finite
and
set, as opposed to you've been cast in this movie and we're going to film it for a certain amount of time. And then we're going to go away and take all this stuff that we filmed and we're going to put it all together. And then we're going to let you know when you can come to a theater and watch it.
And who knows how long production's going to take or how complicated that process is going to do or what editing is going to be done from that point. I mean, that part can take time too.
It can take a huge amount of time. There's a really great guy in town called Wayne. His name is Wayne Johnson, and he made a short film called The Nihilist, and that got him some money to do another one, which was Jack London's The Sea Wolf, an adaptation of Jack London's The Sea Wolf called Into the Void. What he wanted to do is put the sea wolf into outer space. And if you know for those of you listening at home, the Sea Wolf is about a sort of a nihilist, atheist sea captain who's out pirating and I don't know, clubbing baby seals and taking their fur or whatever.
That's what atheists do. Yeah.
That's what we all do.
Yeah.
And then they find a shipwreck, and there's this sort of Christian kind of guy on it. He's made more Christian in Wayne's movie.
Okay.
Because I think Wayne is more of a Christian, and he hired H.T. Altman, who is a local actor, who's also a Christian, and so it really was kind of typecasting. So I'm the captain of the Sea Wolf,
the atheist seal clubber.
H.T. is the Christian pastor who's brought in, and but for the editing thing, we shot that over a full summer, and they are still working it out. You know, his his big thing was he wanted it in space, so we're talking green screen work.
Oh, I suppose.
He has space battles. Yeah. He has guys in spacesuits out in space shooting at each other. So we had to shoot our faces, and then he had to stick them onto the, you know, the models of the astronaut. And so it's just So it takes a long time.
So when did you finish shooting that?
We finished shooting that. I think it's been 3 years now.
Wow.
So we shot that the first year, and he's just been working on it ever since. And every once in a while we see new, you know, oh, great, great. But it's like, there are guys in town who, like Michael Hegel. Michael Hegel did his films, Planet Fall and some stuff. We all shot Planet Fall. And then he spent the next 2 years solely doing all the work. Coloring each cell, doing all the digital work, all the compositing, and he's an amazing, amazing artist. But there are guys in town where they just are their own one-man band, and it takes that long.
It does take that long.
I think Planet Fall, my favorite thing about that was just Jeremy Stumberg dies in that movie, right?
Yes. I'm very pleased that he's mentioned in this episode.
Everybody take a drink.
Is that like 95 episodes?
Someone like shoots at him and misses and hits some rocks and he gets crushed to death by rocks or something. He goes out like a total fucking chunk.
I'm sorry, I'm just entertained by the fact that somebody coming new to this podcast after listening to 5 or 6 episodes is just going to go, who the fuck is Jeremy Stomberg? Why do I not know who this guy is?
I'm going to put who the fuck is Jeremy Stomberg in a t-shirt and sell him at Convergence. Right.
I think you were going to ask something, Molly.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I understand now why when a movie gets made in like 9 or 10 weeks, everyone's like, oh, they shot this in 10 weeks. And everyone's like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And I always thought, the fuck, we get, you know, you put plays, put whole stage productions together when you don't have the tricks and the ease of, you know, being able to focus the audience's attention, you know. And so I didn't understand that there were movies that was a natural thing, that they would take that long to shoot, but it makes sense, you know.
And my focus early on was not to do as much theater, but to do more film, because I could do several films in the time it takes to get a theater production done. Obviously, that's not true with some of the things that I've done, but that's why I haven't done as much theater. And also because I had some great acting gigs and acting contracts, which would take me out of town and like right in the middle of a run, and I just couldn't be involved. So doing media was a little bit better for me, and that's why I'm where I am, really.
Yeah. So I just have to ask, because I know how I would be. You know, you talked a little bit about meeting Sir Ben Kingsley. I would be like squeeing on the inside to the point of not being able to talk.
I'd run away.
Yeah.
You would.
Well, when you see the film, we have lines, and he looks me right in the face.
Oh, my God.
And it shook me to the core.
You're sitting there thinking, I am on screen with Ben Kingsley. I better not suck, aren't you?
I better not suck.
I'm a pretty lady.
He is... having him walk on set that day was a semester of acting class in one day. And I got to be in 2 scenes with him. It was remarkable. He is perfect. He is solid. He's present. To look him in the face after watching all the movies that I've seen him in, it nearly shook me to the core. So I had one line in response to his, and I worked that fucking line in my trailer. Everybody, you know, we get trailers. For those of us lesser beings, we got like fractions of trailers. Oh. So it's like my trailer. I was with Shane Taylor. Shane is from Band of Brothers and some other things, and just a lovely, lovely human being. Well, I'm working my line over and over and over, and we have all this time where, you know, it's the hurry up and wait for actors. So I'm getting this line down because it had changed, you know, by the time I got there that day. So I'm working that fucking line, and we get to set, and Shane looks at me, and I'm kind of starstruck about Shane Taylor too, but he's just so lovely that it didn't matter. So he looked at me out of the corner, gave me a little wink, and said, I worked my lines over and over too. He started, and he would say my line to me, and he said, it's going to work out, man.
That's
great.
It's going to be okay. That's super nice.
Yeah.
So you said you were going to say something about Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yes.
I feel like we need to get back to that.
Yeah. needs to be addressed.
I'm gonna tell the story not exactly how it happened, because I want to keep some things private. But basically it is, my concern was, if I'm going to be on set with Sir Ben Kingsley, what do I call him?
Yeah.
No. If I have to talk directly to him, what do I call him? And he walked right up to me. And it was the great. It was the biggest nightmare I had. He walks right up to me. What do I say?
You can't run because he's like, yeah.
So do I say, "Hey Ben," you know, with my my love boat fingers out, you know, or do I,
Benny?
Yeah, right, Mr. Kingsley. You know, what do I say?
Your Majesty.
So we had this read through, which Ben Kingsley didn't show up for. He was still watching his son get married. But Bern Gorman was there, and a few, and you know, William Hope was there. You may remember William from. Aliens 2, he was the guy who had also, he had only seen Combat Simulated. He was the guy calling the shots.
Yeah.
Oh, he was the lieutenant.
The lieutenant. Mm-hmm. I forget his name.
It doesn't matter. He might be
Gorman.
Sucks. He's a horrible guy. he deserved to die. Whatever. Yeah, anyway.
So we're all there, and so it was, so does anyone have any questions? If, what do I call him? So I had read online what people call him. And I've discovered by doing that, I'm glad I did that, because he loves the fact that that there's Sir in front of his name. And when he was knighted, he, as he should, wanted everybody to call him Sir Kingsley. And he, right after that, he did a movie with Penelope Cruz. And she complied, but she made him work for it. And I guess if you're Penelope Cruz, you can make fun of somebody who really loves it.
Yeah.
So, so fine. Call him Sir Kingsley. Bern Gorman, let me see if I can paraphrase it. He says, he's used a lot of swear words. He says,
you can swear.
He said, oh, don't worry about it. He's just an old, you know, he's just an old queen, just like the rest of us. He's just an actor like the rest of us. Call him Ben. Call him an old cunt. It doesn't really matter. I'm like, dude. You can do that. I'm shit. I'm going to call him Sir Kingsley. And Bern said, yeah, well, all right. You do what you want. And but, yeah. So I called him Sir Kingsley. And I think the director did as well. I think everybody ended up calling him Sir Kingsley.
Did it go over? Like, he didn't even notice. Like it's. I mean, it's just his name.
It's like calling him Doctor, you know, or right. Just calling him
Ms. Glover.
I were knighted, I'd want to be fucking called. Like,
you goddamn right. If I was knighted, Sir Wick.
He loves that more than any Oscar.
Because he's a true son of Britain. I mean, that's the whole point. Like, right. you have to. That is the ultimate honor you can be bestowed when you are, a member of that country. It's just we don't have an equivalent here.
Well, acting in England, it's always been my acting in England is held in a much higher regard than I think it is. In America, I mean, the actors, the well-known English actors that we see in film are still doing stage all the time.
Because they have actors and we have celebrities.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean it. We have some actors too, but they end up becoming celebrities here, and the focus becomes their personal life and what they're wearing.
And when you're an actor and you're knighted for being an actor, that has to be huge.
That's exactly how he. That's you basically paraphrase his quote. That's exactly what it is. So all the effort he put into being a storyteller, as he puts it, was validated by the sir, by the knighthood, not the Oscars. So to have the queen recognize him for that, he couldn't. That's his highest achievement. Mm. And he is a man also to respect because in the sense that he has a lot of science background. So in a lot of his education, he studies as a scientist as well as an actor. So he approaches his acting like a scientist. If I do such and such, this is the result and this is how it will happen.
It's an old school style. That
it's an old school style, but it rides the line, doesn't it?
That's good.
Of the free-for-all acting that can happen just out of the heart and then also the head of understanding how things work.
Yeah.
So as an acting nerd, that really resonates with me.
It's just you have that in improv and regular acting, but in the sense that, like, you know, if you carry yourself in a certain way, you know, if your shoulders are back, your character's going to have a more confident voice.
Right.
You're going to be more confident. If you're taking small steps, you're going to have a smaller presence. I mean, those are all
true.
That's a very scientific way to approach you know, building a character is by, you know, doing the things that you know just physically, you know, make you change your opinion of mm-hmm. yourself as the character. It's really neat that he would do that.
And it makes sense. I think it's higher concept to the tune of simplicity.
Yes.
So being simply himself in these different roles, he doesn't have to put on mm-hmm. or do any tricks. And I think that that's a very sublime, it's like a very fine line between a sublime unmeasurable and a definite measurable response.
Mm-hmm.
So I just find him perfect. And all my influences are English actors.
Yeah.
They're at the top of the list for me. Well, it's Anthony Hopkins and Sir Ben Kingsley. They're perfect for me.
And I don't want to disparage, there are many fine American actors, but I do feel that the British in general, they take acting tremendously seriously.
They've been doing it longer.
They've been doing.
I mean that completely.
Well, it's sure. a part of their national heritage.
It is.
I mean Shakespeare, the yeah. Royal Shakespearean, acting company. I mean it's mm-hmm. it's literally like an important part of their culture mm-hmm. there, and you know, formerly government.
Well,
the way they were sponsored and were patrons of the arts
yeah.
in the aristocracy and stuff like that. I mean, it's we never really had that here. It's not
it's
old.
It's the Puritans. The Puritans
well,
fucked
yeah,
us as
I mean,
usual.
You know? That's,
goddamn Puritans.
No, they did, though, because they didn't appreciate... Because art and that kind of
that's
passion
true.
And beauty, and that was all seen as sinful and wasteful, and it was not part of American culture
even
as
if
often.
It was, even if it was godly, it wasn't allowed.
It was still very...
Because
you know,
it's like dancing.
And
it's
look just what happened when a president went to a play.
Right?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Well, look what happens when we elected that actor, right?
Yeah, the union's intact. The union's intact, all right?
Yeah.
Wow. We could talk about this a lot longer.
I know.
But, we probably should go to five questions.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
Charles.
Oh, it's already to five questions.
It's hard to believe that we've already reached five question time, but I want to, once
if
again.
If you ever have a lull in your schedule, please invite me back.
Oh,
if it's ever like, what the hell do we do now? Invite me back. Because there's so much I want to talk about. I was telling these guys before we rolled that I'm a little starstruck because I listen to this podcast religiously.
It's so weird.
And it is my favorite thing. I take you all over the country with
it's
me.
So flattering.
I,
thank you.
It's so weird.
I know.
I don't know if I'll ever be comfortable.
Well, because this feels like just some fucking thing we do in Tim's basement.
Sometimes.
It is a fucking thing we do in Tim's basement. We're in my basement right now.
I one time, I had like, this is like my biggest like, small time, you know, Minneapolis actor star thing. I was in Home Depot like looking at sandpaper.
Yeah.
And there were two like, 20s-ish girls down the aisle from me, like whispering and looking at
giggling.
Me as I'm, you know, like trying to find the right grain of sandpaper to use on glass or whatever the fuck. And so like whisper, whisper, giggle, and one of them comes up and goes, you're Beefcake, right? And I'm like, me and my wife and I do act out of the Renaissance Festival. And she's like, you're, you know, like, oh, you guys are great. And like,
you're my
whatever.
Favorite Viltan.
You're my favorite in Vilification Tennis. And I was just like, aww. Like, I was.
You came home and you were like, I just stood there with my mouth open. And I just was like, you're like, I think I said thank you. I hope I said thank you. But I kind of blacked out.
I can't. I don't.
You know,
react to that kind of praise very well.
The best and totally different kind of star moment, but the best star moment for me was I was in GameStop in the Mall of America with my kids shopping for video games, and some guy comes up and he doesn't say, you know, hey, are you Tim Rennie? He's like, dregs are awesome. And I'm like, what? Who the fuck are you?
That's great.
So, you know.
Because you guys, this podcast is... Your content is great. You're funny as hell. You are incredibly intelligent.
And thank you.
Really admire.
That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Very kind.
Thank you.
Well, and wow, this has been great. Yeah, we'll have you back.
We need to have you back to talk about atheism too.
We're gonna keep talking good things about us.
Yeah, we'd like to have you back to talk about us some more.
Sure.
But
tell me about my eyes.
Not me. It makes me feel weird.
Let's talk about five questions. Molly, question number one.
Question number one. What's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
Can't be your own.
Is that are we setting that precedent?
What?
No, it can be your own.
I just got back from L.A. yesterday, and I saw Captain America while I was there. Love it. And I appreciate the last episode you guys put up. You had boners about Captain America.
Because that was a
totally
boner.
There
I got
with
a
you.
Lot of boners
totally
for Captain America.
You.
Yeah.
That movie so
and the movie.
Good.
Yes.
It was very cool. And all of the references to things. And I honestly felt that Captain America has taken the place of the old... Reeves Superman.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So he has become that superhero that I looked up to. Like, because Superman doesn't mean shit to me. And,
God, I hope Chris Evans doesn't become a paraplegic.
It was, what does this? Yeah,
just
right.
Stay away from horses. And,
well, that's how. What's his name? Winter Soldier will finally take the shield.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I have to
because he is contracted for more movies than Evans.
Six, right?
I have to say, so if you love like John Hughes movies, teen movies, things like just if you know them well and you like. Chris Evans, you should see Not Another Teen Movie, which is a very underrated satire of all of those teen movies. And he is
like the late 90s.
He is just fucking gold in that movie. He's the main guy. Yeah. He's like
is
the main.
He really?
Yes, he's the main guy.
Am I getting this right that he was the Human Torch in the Fantastic?
Yes.
Because he was the only thing I liked in the Fantastic.
When I heard he was cast as Captain America, I was like, he's gonna be perfect.
That movie sucked ass, but he was a great Johnny Storm.
Jimmy McMahon,
yeah.
Is a great dude.
You're right. No, you know what? He wasn't okay. This is a tough spot for me. He was an okay Doom, but I don't fault him for that.
He was
the perfect casting choice for Victor Von Doom. The arrogance and the pretty face and like the like
perfection.
He could like walk into a room and own the room, like that kind of persona or whatever that comes with him.
Yeah,
and they still managed to fuck it.
they fucked up Doom, is what they did. It wasn't really his fault.
I'm kind of relieved that they cast the villain for the next Fantastic Four movie as the classic Fantastic Four villain, the Mole Man.
Oh, Mole Man.
And so
that's
hopefully they just leave Doom the fuck out of it so they don't fuck it up.
I always get nervous about that. I always get nervous about that because if they're gonna. You know, you put a villain like the Mole Man. Okay, he's the Mole Man. You can put that in a movie.
Yeah.
Well,
it's gonna look hokey.
With Mole Man comes like giant subterranean creatures destroying Manhattan.
Yeah. You're
like
right.
I mean, there's the monster movie type thing they could do with that, or they could do. They could go a lot of ways with it.
Yeah.
With
there's absolutely no guarantee it's going to be very cool.
Oh,
but,
I'm pretty sure it's going to be awful.
Like sand
because they're just forgettable movies.
Yeah. You know, you hope they get it right
with
this time.
You
hope they're watching what's going on with the Marvel franchise and go, wow, these guys are really getting it. And with each good movie, what they're doing is because it's all a business. It's all about money, right?
Of course.
And you build your box office success. You make the next movie more profitable by just continuing to make these really, really solid movies.
But a good point to say, and I read this on a from a blog that I totally agree with the new series Gotham. I agree with this blogger. I am tired of being targeted with all this influx of movies, superhero movies.
Cash grab.
It's a nerdy. Let's make
superhero
it.
Superhero cash grab.
Superhero
and it feels like Gotham. So, okay, it's a Gordon... it's a Jim Gordon origination story. Yeah. Okay, I can kind of get behind that.
Lieutenant
I did.
Gordon
but then, the trailer is all about, he is actually Bruce Wayne's first mentor.
No, he's not.
If you're going to do Batman Year One, there's a very good example of how to do Batman Year One. It's called Batman Year One.
Right.
It's
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a huge hit. It's already been established. Why...
Yeah. What,
who do you think you are that you can come up with something better than Arthur Miller? So yeah. And then so not only that, so you see him and then you see the kids. Oh, there's Poison Ivy as a kid. And there's a young teenage Riddler. And oh, there's a. It's like I don't.
And the whole time
it's fucking Smallville, man.
All I can picture is some guy with like some old not geek guy with like bags of money going Riddler,
I know you guys dig S.H.I.E.L.D. and I haven't got into it
yet.
You gotta get past the five episodes.
Like
I watched it until she jumped into the pool because I was told she's hot. Watch her jump in the pool. Yeah. And I stopped.
No. What you gotta do is you gotta get through those first four or five episodes. Yep. It really starts to pick up. Right. And once you hit...
You'll know what happens.
Once you hit like two episodes before Captain America came out.
Yeah.
And ever since Captain America, it's like, holy fuck.
Yeah. All right. You're doing what we did, and that's you're watching them after seeing Captain America. You'll start to see how it ties into the movie before anyone else would have not seen the movie.
All right, cool.
So once you start to see how it's setting up this tie into the movie, it's fucking great.
Okay.
Yeah. I think season two.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly that season two is going to be strong coming out.
Question
of
number two is: who is your favorite atheist character?
I was very disappointed that Ben Sundell brought up Blackadder. Because I was solid after 95 episodes. I was thinking podcast. I was thinking I'm in.
You had that one in your pocket just
by. But he didn't quite nail mine. Mine is Lord Flashheart from the Blackadder series, because seeing Lord Flashheart chide someone by saying, "Still believe in God." It was hilarious, and it occurred to me that I didn't have to. And the reason why he's my favorite is not only is it one of my favorite humor bits of all time, but it actually launched my skepticism from that bit character.
That's brilliant.
We were talking about it on the Cosmos episode, the way when Carl Sagan says, "Why not save a step?" And I was like, holy shit, you can do that. You can do... something that I can do.
There are literally people who don't know that it's an option to not have faith. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things about... like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, when she does speeches about Islam, she makes it a point to say... I mean, it's the... Everybody makes this point. Hitchens makes the point. Bertrand Russell made the point even before him. It's all about you're only that religious sect because you grew up in it.
Yeah.
It's because of your environment that you're that way. And you're only that way because you grew up in this country or you grew up in America or you're in this Islamic country. Mm-hmm. And Ali is saying we have to almost side with the Christians when we look at Islam by giving them other options to think about. Because they are locked into the thinking of Islam and what she calls the concern of the hereafter. Everything is concerned with the hereafter and nothing is concerned with life as we know it. So innovation is out. Innovation is, as she says, innovation is about life. But all they are is about the hereafter. So if you get any imams who start thinking, well, you know, maybe we should print some books. What is it? Hitchens brings up how they haven't done any, new Arabic translations of anything for a couple hundred years.
Because they don't want women to know how to read, and they generally don't want most men to know how to read either, really. I mean, it's better if you just don't know how to read.
These people are a lot easier to corral and wrangle if you keep them in the dark.
Yeah.
There's a considerable amount of ignorance that is beneficial. If you are going to lead people to God.
But I think about these favorite characters, and that's what launched me. Everybody's probably got that symbol that launched them into atheism, skepticism. I have often wondered, as I'm reading stories to my now 17-month-old boy, if Winnie the Pooh is an atheist. I think the original A.A. Milne stuff is so separate from a supernatural... reference to a deity, reference to the supernatural, even though he lives in an enchanted forest and it's all fictional. And I've gone online, dudes, and I've seen blogs of born-again Christians who shut down Winnie the Pooh because he's an atheist. And that tickled me to death.
If it's good enough to piss them off, is it good enough for me to like?
Right, piss them off. So, all right, he's an atheist. Fuck
yeah. Look into this. Well, he has a god. It's Christopher Robin. I mean, that's, you know, like,
that's true.
Christopher Robin is his creator. Well, not his creator. Well, he imbued him with life.
Right. That's
kind of creative. All right. Anyway. Question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
It's acting.
Yeah.
Because I sacrifice everything, probably oftentimes to my detriment, to act.
I know. When my wife and I got married, when we were getting married, I was a theater major, and I was going to be a tech. I was going to be a designer. I wanted to be a designer and build sets and shit.
Wow!
And I don't know. I was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And she was like, "I cannot be married to somebody who's never home."
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, that's a deal I'm willing to make." But yeah, if you're going to do theater,
It's one of the reasons. There's two. I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was young, and then I changed my mind when I was about in high school. When I went to college, I took an anthropology class that was going to be the beginning of me going into anthropology, archaeology, something along those lines. And then I realized that it was just that it would be very difficult to have a husband, a family, you know, and that also I have, you know, my brother and sister are so much younger. Then I was like, I am choosing this life that is away from my life, family, and is that what I want? Not that there is anything wrong with choosing that, but I just realized I didn't want that. And you know,
opportunity cost is a decision. Yeah. Anyone who's going to make that, as their future, has to make those decisions.
I mean, I have to assume that you and your wife had that conversation. Is your wife an actress as well?
She is. Okay. Right.
So that makes it even doubly interesting.
And like all actors, we made a promise to ourselves not to get into a relationship or marry an actor.
Yeah.
I tried. I dated a geologist for a while. I dated
the only people who understand
a business
you.
Person, and it just became conversations became boring as hell. And I didn't
probably for both parties, honestly. I mean,
maybe I never asked them.
The geologist might have been just as bored hearing about acting as you know. I mean, that's the thing is to other people who don't enjoy comedy, I have a feeling that I am a fucking drone because
comedians.
Yeah,
all we fucking talk about is comedy. All the time.
A bunch of comedians in a room together is the biggest fucking circle jerk.
Yeah.
Ever. Well, like, it's, I mean.
It's no different than going to an actor party.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's always about, so what are you doing now? You know, what are you in now?
Well, I saw you in this and you were great.
So how are you? Well, I'm good. My show just opened. Yep. My movie just opened. I was just in a commercial. No. How are you?
I'm busy. I'm stressed. I'm good. I'm keeping
because
up.
I just had an audition.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know how to say anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
But
Question four: what is your favorite sandwich?
This is my first, fuckers.
Oh boy.
All right.
A gyro.
Oh.
I love a gyro.
Yeah.
The queen of sandwiches.
The queen of sandwiches. Yeah, that's right.
You know,
no, that's the
The Shah of sandwiches.
The Shah of sandwiches. There you go.
Oh, that's racist.
Well, it's got to be another ruler that's not the king. Is because the Reuben's the king of sandwiches.
The Zeus of sandwiches.
The Zeus of sandwiches. The Kronos of sandwiches. I don't know.
All right,
it's the beef and lamb mix. Mm-hmm. It's not the
shawarma.
It's not shawarma. Shawarma's a little different.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought that was beef and lamb mix on a donut kebab.
No, it's a little actually. The gyro is like they blend it together and they stick it on that spit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a shawarma is only different in that they have thin slices that they lay in layers on the spit.
Oh,
okay.
I always assumed that
now I know the difference between...
Yeah. I always assumed that carving
it off. Material, the preparation
it
style
is
what's different.
But it does cook it. It would cook differently did it that way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the shawarma... And there's a mix of either it's beef and lamb or it's pork and lamb or it's chicken and... it's gotten to the point where there really isn't much difference in the meat they prepare now. So it's gyro, shawarma, and then and something else. They're all sort of using the same meat now. Mm-hmm. But it's what are they served on? And what do you serve it with?
Right.
You know, so I love gyro meat. I love, you know, some marinated fried green peppers and onions in there. The tzatziki yogurt, the Greek yogurt. I can't make it myself. But
I've tried to. It's so impossible.
I can't do
but
it.
Other people can make it for you. It's really okay.
Yeah, it's really okay. And I don't even have a favorite place to get it. It's just often some street
although
vendor.
Let me recommend Holy Land.
You know what? I'm going to
like the Holy Land as much
the
as...
The best hero I've ever had was at Zakia.
Yeah?
In Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
I lived right there.
Yeah.
And every day I was eating
heroes. He worked at Quest right
like,
there.
Oh, really?
And every day he was eating right. there.
So you can... Because I don't like crunchy onions unless they've been cooked.
Mm-hmm.
I like raw. And some places in the Euro...
Oh,
like
yeah.
Some
you have a
onion.
Problem with crunchy things in your salad.
So I...
Yeah.
They,
and you
they,
don't.
For the vegetable
right.
in my...
You remember
my,
our episodes more than we do.
For the vegetable in my Euro, they would put in tabbouleh salad. Like that really sour vegetable mix where it's like, you know, fine...
They did that at Zakia?
Chopped up. Yeah. They'll do that.
That's not my thing. I told them not to do that. So.
It's
I'm that's
saying,
cool.
That place, those the people that work there are super friendly and accommodating.
I know because it's David's mom that cooks, and David runs the front of the store. Yeah.
Do you prefer the pita to be like? Is it do you roll it? Do you just do it taco style? What's your preference?
My preference is getting it from a street vendor, having it wrapped in foil, the
like
fat
burrito
pita is
style.
Around it, burrito style, and eating it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it served open face.
Yeah.
Kind of tastes the same, but it's not the same. You know, there's nothing like doing it again.
By the time you get done with one of those, I mean, you are covered in Euro.
I first fell in love with Euros when I was playing rock and roll, and we would, you know, there's nothing like doing a gig, popping out on the street, and there's some Euro guy on the street with his little hot dog cart. Fucking right, you know. I just did.
Where's
my?
You played rock and roll too. God,
where's my like Greek food truck?
I don't know. We don't live in downtown Minneapolis. So.
I'm just saying, I want a Greek food truck.
Yeah,
you know there isn't one. Okay,
question
number
five. What's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said about your atheism?
My in-laws had to remind my wife when we were getting married that. There's the very distinct possibility that she was going to hell.
Oh.
And,
for marrying you.
Yeah, for marrying me. For marrying, to be honest, marrying a non-Catholic.
Oh.
And it didn't really matter. Now, I was, I still have an affinity for Buddhism and Taoism. And so while I have to admit that atheism is sort of a bit new for me.
Mm-hmm.
So on my path, which I'd love to come on and talk about some other time.
Yeah.
Is getting into a secular Buddhism, which is really more Taoism.
Just being nice to
and
people.
Just being nice to people.
Yeah.
And the science of self.
Right.
And we can talk about how Sam Harris, has talked about this as well. But, so I was sort of couching myself in the Buddhism, whereas really I just dug what Buddhism had to say, but I just didn't believe in God.
You didn't feel that there was no otherworldly spiritual connection.
Right.
There's
the
connection with within
it's
people.
Philosophical, not spiritual.
Right.
I mean, it's all about living a good
Buddhism,
life and being happy and being a positive force in the universe.
I feel similar.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I'm down with it.
I feel similarly with paganism. I'm always going to have a little soft spot in my heart for paganism and druid nature, kind of stuff. Like when I'm at a fest and I see crystals and shit, and I'm always like,
I had that hippie new age shit. I've still got all my tarot cards.
For me, it was like
kitschy and cool.
Ace of True, the Viking shit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Sitting in a circle and drinking meat out of a horn while telling stories.
That totally
stuff. Like, that's awesome.
But it was a deeply emotional time when we were getting married, and it was a terrible schism occurred between my wife and her parents, and we've only now started healing, and there's nothing like a grandchild.
I was going to say, there you go.
Heal that.
It's the
But they, you know, they started quoting catechism, and it was,
oof.
So then it was our marriage was not legitimate. And there was a big drama around our marriage, and so my big question was, so it's not legitimate. Do you think that my child is illegitimate? Do you think that my child is a bastard child? What is your view of me? Am I not as human as you are?
Mm-hmm.
I honest
that's
to God,
no,
I have to know.
A good way to go
that's
with
really...
it.
And they won't answer that because they don't have the language to enunciate that. They don't have the. They just don't have that.
If they hear themselves, when you ask someone a direct question like that and kind of sort of call them on their shit, which sounds a little passive aggressive, more on the aggressive mm-hmm. side. When you are, when you counter that with assertiveness and a direct question like that,
yeah,
you won't get an answer sometimes because they can't articulate the awful thing they want to say without them realizing how awful it is that they're yes. going to say it.
Yeah,
they'd be confronted with the reality that what they believe is mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And so they won't say it.
Is your wife Catholic, lapsed Catholic?
Yeah, she's a bit lapsed Catholic. Mm-hmm. I think in our marriage, she's just sort of stopped being a Catholic.
Sure.
But she's coming from a long history of Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And I was raised Catholic, too.
Yeah, so absolutely. Me, too. I get it. Yeah.
Well, you're familiar with the traditions and celebrations and all that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, I mean, from a cultural background standpoint, I'm sure makes things easier.
And
sure.
that idea of confronting, it reminds me of, you know, when the vote no, and then eventually, you know, then when that stuff was going on, and
yeah.
and one of the things that they were, you know, we were saying is like, you know, your mom and her wife, and it's like taking their girls and just going and saying, these are our daughters. Please explain to them why their moms shouldn't get to be married. I mean, tell them why we're bad.
Please explain this
please.
To this
explain
six-year-old
this to this,
girl.
This adorable and, six-year-old girl yeah. and her 10-year-old sister. Explain to them why you think we are bad parents
Man,
for them.
The little
and
one
how
has
you think,
super puppy dog eyes.
Yeah.
So, and like,
so I never wanted to separate us from my in-laws. I didn't want my child to grow up not knowing his grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Illinois, so the distance is really helpful.
Sure.
And there's just a Skype once a week, so it's just fine. But my son is going to know what happened at the wedding.
Good.
He's going to know how they treated me before the wedding. And he'll be able to make up his own mind. Just like anything that I want to teach him philosophically. I really agree with you on your parenting style when it comes to philosophy and spirituality and religion. I want him to know how I feel, always question, and not have anybody tell him how to think. But just like in family relationships, he's going to know what happened, and he's going to know how I felt, and he can make the choice.
No secrets is the best way to be in a family.
Yeah.
I really, truly believe that. You can't be a cohesive unit if you're hiding things from one another.
Right.
Just genuinely.
Oh, shit. I better go tell my kids something right now.
You're adopted.
No. I ate all your Halloween candy.
Charles, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming out and joining us.
It's been my
really
absolute pleasure.
It. Once again, Walking with the Enemy, which I believe when this podcast goes up will still be in theaters. But if it is not still in theaters, look for it on video because it features Charles Hubble and, of course, Sir Ben Kingsley in
it's
addition to...
It's not in theaters. Burn the theater down.
Burn the theater down.
Brick style. Because
they love Nazis.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah.
So we have been Geeks Without God. Thank you for joining us. Please, if you enjoyed our show, go rate us on iTunes. Go like us on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter and do
comment
all the social media things you people should do. And
do
tell Charles how awesome you think he is because he's been a great guest. And this has been our 99th episode.
Oh my God.
Right now. So our
99?
Next episode. Yes, 99, our next
I've
episode.
I've done 99 episodes and this podcast is all of them.
Our next episode will be our 100th episode. We will be going to church and recording the results.
Yeah,
so, Charles, you are a great lead end to that experience. And we will catch you next week.
Speaking of Nazis, I mean,
it's a Jay-Z reference.
Oh, I get it.
This is the Vampire LeShock, and these people believe that I don't exist. Well, we'll see how they feel after I drain them.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
But look, it's Grumpy Cat.
I know, it's Grumpy Cat.